Welcome to Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, a podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. TIPQC exists to improve health outcomes for mothers and infants in Tennessee through our quality collaborative that will identify opportunities to optimize maternal and infant outcomes across our state and is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. The Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast is designed for medical professionals and for patients and families across the state. We will focus on all aspects of the perinatal period with special attention to reducing our maternal mortality rate. This podcast is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health.
Welcome to the Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast, brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. I'm Scott Guthrie, a neonatologist, the state project leader for the Tennessee's Tiniest Babies Project, and the past infant medical director of TIPQC. One of the things that I like so much about these podcasts are the interesting people we get to have conversations with about topics that can help improve care for mothers and babies, not only in Tennessee, but anywhere else this podcast is being listened to. Today, we have Dr. Tarif Bakdash joining me again. Once again, Dr. Bakdash is a pediatric neurologist and is the chief of the Division of Child Neurology at the University of Kentucky in Lexington. Now, if you haven't listened to last week's episode yet, you might want to go back and do that. Dr. Bakdash is sharing with us his 12 skills for a better life that he's developed to help physician colleagues. And I think these skills are vitally important for all healthcare professionals to develop, as they can help us immensely as we navigate our careers, work in a stressful environment, and balance our professional and personal lives. But these are also things that everyone listening today could improve upon. So Tarif, welcome back to our show today. I really enjoyed last week's conversation, and I can't wait to learn more from you today.
No, thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's wonderful to be back again. It's an amazing experience for me also. Thank you so much.
So to start this episode off, can you remind everyone of the 12 skills we are focusing on?
Sure. Time management is one. Second is how to avoid any cognitive biases and how to think clearly. Third, how to change ourselves to a better place. Fourth, how to find our purposes and passions and talents. Fifth is how do we manage our emotions, followed by how do we argue to reach a win-win actually situation. How do we manage difficult conversations? How do we have life-work balance? And how do we problem solve the problems that we face and how to be creative? How do we have leadership in the 21st century? How to be moral? And finally, how to be able to bring all of this actually together, which is not going to be, of course, easy sometimes, but I think we can put all this together.
Wonderful. So just to remind everybody, last week we dealt with these first six, and this week we're going to deal with the second group of six, things that we need to master so we can have a better life. So let's start with difficult conversations. Why is this important? And give me some examples that I may encounter that I need to develop this type of important skill.
Well, we all, get into arguments, obviously. It's part of being human, whether at work, whether in personal life, wherever we are, we all get into arguments. And what happens with these arguments is that people tend to take what you say or what I say, make it into a story in their head. And that story becomes a negative story. Well, he said this because he meant that, or he wanted to hurt me, or whatever. I respond to you, and you take that, you make your own story. That's also negative. What happens? We get really angry at each other, or we disconnect. Instead of saying, well, this was a difficult conversation, well, let me ask Scott, hey, Scott, when you said this, I get you maybe wrong, maybe, but I thought that's what you meant. Is that what you meant? And you say to me, no, that's not what I meant. Of course not. The same thing. You do that with me. That will dissolve the issue. Now, on the other side, if we don't, we end up not talking, angry at each other. We need to go back and focus on what we call the last episode, the shared value. Everyone should focus on the shared value. Whenever people argue and get into that negative mode of disconnecting or getting angry, they should remind each other, what is the shared value? Couples, well, what's the shared value of marriage? Politics, what's the shared value? It's our country, our nation. That's the shared value. And that will help us a lot, actually, in dissolving these difficult conversations.
Love it. So this next one, I think, is really interesting, especially how you've arranged the words. It's a life-work balance. And I've got to ask, is this even possible as a healthcare worker? And I personally feel like I'm constantly taking the pressures of the neonatal intensive care unit home with me and dwelling on things that happen, constantly thinking about things that happen. If I could have done this, should have done that. How in the world do I maintain this balance and especially have a life-work balance?
Now, as you know, Scott, you know, the AMA, by the way, came with the numbers that jumped from 38% of burnout rates in physicians to 63% in 1 year between 2020 and 2021. And that's dangerous. That's really horrible. And all the programs that all the centers, I'm sure, including your center, we have now a wellness, for example, officer in our department. And everybody's talking about wellness. I think the problem is there's a lot of talking, not much action. I think we're at the talking stage nowadays. Everybody talks about it, but I don't see the action. I'll give you an example. I was on call and I had three of the residents with me. And I said, guys, you know, let's go eat. So four times during my call, I took them to eat lunch and bought the food because I thought, you know, these four guys, I don't want to pay for the food and got the food. So, okay, let's sit and eat. None of them could sit and eat. They all jumped back to their offices or whatever, their desktops to finish work. And I said, why don't you, what you should eat? They're like, well, we can't eat because we have to finish our work. And one of them struck me by saying to me, she was a senior resident. She said, Dr. Bakhtesh, do you realize I don't even know how to eat without working? And that struck me like, oh my God, what are we doing here? So I believe we should go further. Instead of saying work-life balance or life-work balance, I believe we should go for life more than work and should be in balance. We need to go back to the slowing down that we talked about. Time management, slow down. We have to stop this. This is madness. We are not producing, actually. We're pseudo-producing. We're not producing quality. We're producing just numbers. It's not about numbers. It's about quality, and that's what's lacking. And it takes action. And action should be done right away. It should not wait even.
Yeah, how do we do this as healthcare workers? Though? That's the thing that I just find is so tough. I mean, I hear everything that you're saying. I want to do this, but the constant pull in multiple different directions, it just can be so terribly hard. How do we say no to some of these things?
I think, Scott, we need to really change the whole system. It's not just about fixing one spot. We have to change, for example, the way insurance companies work. We have to fix how these poor medical students have to pay for their loans. We have to fix the idea how much we're paying for healthcare, 16% of the national budget. We're the highest in the world. There's something wrong, not only in one thing. It's actually multivariables. And we have to be honest, sincere, and as a nation, accept the changes. You know, we cannot keep doing what we're doing. We're breaking the system. And that's going to affect us in the long term. And we really have to be serious about it, not just talk about it, but really do something about it. And of course, you have to do a stepwise approach, but we need to start. And physicians have to stand up and say, no, I'm not going to do this, and we shouldn't do this. It's not right. It's wrong. And we have to stop this kind of RVU system, which everything is based on how much money you make instead of the quality of what you're doing. And I believe it's changing now, but it should change faster.
Mm-hmm. And just real quickly before we move on from this topic, when we talk about wellness, what are some things a healthcare professional could do to help instill a sense of wellness and well-being in their life? As you mentioned, we've all got these wellness committees and centers and things like that in our institutions, but it's a lot of talk and no action. But give us some practical things we can do that we could act upon to while these things are hopefully changing, we can do to begin changing ourselves inwardly.
Again, I think the first thing I've noticed from all the wellness that I've read about is that you have to ask yourself, how can I carve less time working? We have the amount of, for example, emails. We have to drop the idea to respond right away. We have to ask ourselves, well, what about what I like outside work? What are my passions outside work? How can I really drop the amount of work and go back home as soon as possible? When I was in Michigan, I used to tell all the nurses, please, at 5 o'clock, you have to leave. Now, I don't care what work you have. I don't care what's happening. The world's not going to fall apart. By 5 p.m., you have to leave. And I actually would go around the office and tell people, okay, why are you still here? I want you out of here. 12 to 1. I'm not trying to force the idea of 12 to 1. People should not be eating at their desks. And people should not, this is horrible. People should enjoy the 12 to 1. That's called lunch break, not work break. I mean, people should go actually and just look at the sun. Get out of that place. And I see everybody around me eating at their desk. I'm the only one who's not eating at his desk. I'm like, we can afford that. It's not too complicated. So I think we should start by asking ourselves, well, how can I drop down the amount of work? And maybe, yes, maybe if you drop a little bit the amount of money you make, well, fine. But it's worth it. If the RV you're going to drop a little bit, let it be. But I think also we have to work collectively as physicians and nurses and healthcare providers. We have to have these, I think, small units and have these open discussions. For example, in New York, you can say, okay, how many people you have working with you? 10, 20, whatever. Meet together and say, okay, we're going to ask, what are the top two things we have to change to have a better life? And gather that information and then go up to the higher level and say, listen, we need to change these two things as soon as possible. And believe me, they will listen. And that's how it should work. I think we should get together because every context is different. So the way you guys are doing things, you must find ways together as a team to drop the pressure. And to drop the pressure, we have to do it together. And then you have to go up and say, listen, guys, we have to change these two things. These are priorities for us. And that will help, I think, change things at least sooner than later.
Love it. All right. Next on our list is becoming a problem solver and then being creative. So I completely get the problem-solving thing. I mean, that's sort of what we do every day when we've got a patient who comes in with an issue. But why is it important for me to develop the skill of creativity? And how can I do a better job of developing that skill and the problem-solving skill too?
You know, actually, Scott, if you remember, we talked about last episode how the Economic Forum in 2023 actually mentioned that one of the top things they're looking for is problem-solving creativity. Well, what does that mean? Creativity means that you take what you know and you create a solution for a problem. So a new solution for a problem that you have. But to be creative, you need to have, for example, less pressure from work, right? I cannot be creative. I'm bombarded by 50,000 things I'm trying to solve. There's no way I can be creative. So we need to have also conditions around me to allow me to be creative. I took actually a whole course at Cambridge University, the University of Cambridge in England a few months ago. And that course is actually called Creativity, Problem Solving, Design Thinking, and System Thinking in School of Engineering. So actually there are courses that we could learn from how to solve problems. And there's a certain way of thinking that allows you to be more creative. Give an example when you do, for example, brainstorming sessions, right? Or people have meetings. So the way you do it usually is you go in the meeting and people say, hey, we have a problem, let's think about it. Now, the better way actually is to do it before you ask every person alone to think about the problem with their thoughts anonymously and send it or put on a piece of paper. You bring all these papers and you read them because we have something called anchoring bias, right? We talked about thinking problems. Mm-hmm. Anchoring bias means I throw my first idea and guess what? Everybody's going to anchor about my idea. Around my idea. And then you discuss all the possibilities. What happens when we think about solving a problem, we tend to think in a dichotomous way. This possibility or this possibility, only two options. When you have actually 20, 30 options, when you're trying to solve a problem, go wild. Put all the possible thoughts that come to you and don't judge them. Don't judge anything initially. When you put all these ideas, then you group them later, and then you start critiquing those ideas. The problem is whenever you go into a meeting, you say an idea, somebody will shoot it down, and you stop thinking. You stop wanting to be creative because you've been shut down. Your brain stops working, actually. So there's ways, actually, to be creative, and that's part of what we're hoping to teach the students here is how do you be creative. And it's not too complicated, actually. It's a matter of having a psychologically safe environment, basically. Can I have a space where I can say whatever I want without being judged? The problem is we tend to jump in and judge each other right away.
Yeah, that's good. All right, number 10, leadership in the 21st century. What does that mean exactly? And then what does this look like? What does leadership in the 21st century look like?
So the key thing is now in the 21st century, and I took my executive leadership at the University of Oxford this last year, 2023, hierarchy should be flat. There is no hierarchy anymore. We should not have hierarchy. Why? Because if, for example, if I have someone working with me who's a neuro-oncologist, well, she's a leader as a neuro-oncologist, I should not be meddling and playing with her work. That's her job. She should be the leader. I tell everyone in my department now, everyone is a leader. My secretary is a leader because she does things I don't know how to do. I should not be playing with her work. I should be meddling with her work. So we are all leaders. That's leadership in the 21st century. So the way to do it, actually, you don't need to be an MBA, no. All you need is to learn the basic skills, motivation, organizational skills. How can you stay on the top floor watching the dancing floor, but yet go down to the dancing floor and see what's going on down there? It's just basic skills. When you teach people these basic skills, they all can be leaders. The problem is we have the hierarchy system in our heads, the chair and whatever, and the vice chair and the associate dean and the dean and whatever. Well, that's not how it should be. We should be all thinking as leaders. And that actually will induce in people the tendency to be creative, because now they can speak up. Now they can think for themselves. Now they are the leader. And that's how it should be. So everyone should be a leader in the 21st century.
Love it. Number 11, it's also interesting, is simply how to be moral. But, you know, that can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people in a lot of different ways. So I've got to get you to explain this further to us. What does that mean, how to be moral, and how do I need to do this?
Now, I'm definitely biased because one of my master's degrees was in philosophy of bioethics from the University of Toronto. So I'm an ethicist by training also. The reason I said how to be moral, because we all have basic moral rules in our lives. Whatever we believe in, whether you're a Christian or a Muslim or a Jew or a Hindu or Buddhist or Shinto, whatever you follow, we have basic moral rules. The goal is to make all of us go back to these basic moral rules. So that way we don't start judging each other. Think about the true fact, 99.9% of people on earth, whatever belief system they follow, they were born into it. They were not really, they did not have the chance to choose, because if they got to choose, guess what's going to happen? They have to study all the belief systems and the non-belief systems to decide what they really want to choose. Unfortunately, that's not what happens. So basically, we are all a product of our families and culture and context that we talked about. So for me, instead of saying, well, how should you become a wonderful Christian or a wonderful Muslim or a Jew or a Buddhist, I wanted to, how can I gather all of these wonderful teachings? Because every religion has beautiful teachings. Let's put it all together. Let's bring even the non-believers into this. And let's put together how to be a moral person. Because when I studied all religions, Scott, I realized there was one amazing common theme. It's one word, compassion. Compassion. Can I not just feel for you, but can I help you? Can I aid you, regardless of who you are, regardless of where you came from? When you go to Jordan and help these patients, 99% are Muslims. They're not Christians. But you help them. Exactly. That's what does it mean to be a moral person, that you go beyond these things, beyond these limitations. Yes, of course, you should respect your religion. You should live your religion. You should love your religion. There's nothing wrong with that. But let's share now morality as human beings. Let's help each other to save planet Earth. Just think about it. We are the small spickle called Earth, living amongst 300 billion stars, the size of the sun or even bigger than the sun, living among 100 billion galaxies. And we're the only human we are aware of. And really, we can't fix what's happening on Earth. We can't have peace. We can't have like ways of living together and with kindness and compassion. So that's why I believe how to be moral is crucial.
Yeah, I love that too, summarizing the teachings of the great religions and compassion. I'm just thinking of something we did at my church just this past Sunday, and that was the parable of the Good Samaritan, which of course you've got these ethnic groups played out in this parable, and this one undesired ethnic group, this Samaritan, is the one who actually shows compassion to the man in need at the time. So I love how you summarized how to be moral. Yeah, beautiful story. Beautiful story. And man, I wish our world could do that better.
It'd be taught to everybody. I think it's a beautiful story, the Samaritan. It's a beautiful story.
Yeah. So finally, the 12th thing is we've got to have positive thoughts, and that's going to lead to actions. How do I develop this skill? And where in the world, if I develop all of these skills, is it going to take me?
So as you know, we mentioned, Scott, when you look at all these skills, and I'm sure somebody can come up with other things. For example, you could talk about emotional intelligence. That's another important skill, obviously. But when you use all these skills, it leads you to something important. That's positive thinking. Now, positive thinking, we talked about mindset before. The way I use this, actually, simply by telling people there's always a silver lining in anything that happens in life. You just have to find it. For example, COVID time, right? I used to ask my medical students, okay, give me something, silver lining with COVID. And I remember the classmate, but it was Zoom, of course. You know, what are you talking about? What do you mean silver lining? Look where we are right now. We're stuck somewhere. What is it? There's no way. And I'm like, wait a second. Let me give you an example. The pollution has dropped dramatically by 30%. This is the first time you could sit with your mom and dad and your loved ones for hours. This was a chance to know each other at the human level, to eat together, to spend so much with each other. I said, dogs and pets loved it. The dogs loved it the most, I think. Think about it, right? So, I mean, the wild animals start coming into big cities. I mean, all of that is a silver lining. Yes, we lost millions, of course. It was horrible. But now we learned how we can work together as nations to stop the next epidemic, hopefully, God forbid, if it came. So you see, there's always silver linings. That's positive thinking. Whenever we are dealing with bad things, wrong things, stressful things, let's ask the question, where is that silver lining? Because there's always a silver lining. And that's the mindset that we talked about before. And that will lead us actually to have a better life, not only for us, but for everyone. I'll just tell you something interesting. One of the candidates I'm hopefully hiring from Boston Children's to join us, and he liked it here. He said, what do you expect from me as the chair? I said three things. Number one, be kind to everyone that comes your way. Just be kind. I said, my first role, kindness. Second role, do your best. Just do your best. I don't want you to be hardworking, but just do your best. And I said, the third one, can you improve yourself and improve everyone that comes your way? That's all I'm asking for.
Love it. You don't need a neonatologist in your neurology department, do you?
Would love to have it. Can you work with you? I mean, I would love to work with you. It's amazing what you're doing with this podcast.
We'll appreciate it. Well, let's wrap up with one of my favorite questions. And I do this every time I get to sit down with somebody because it's a lot of fun to see all the different things people have ideas about sharing. But if you were given money for a big billboard somewhere there in Lexington, and as people are driving into the hospital every day or to watch the horse races or whatever, and they were passing this big billboard, you could put a quote on it that's been meaningful to you, something that you've lived your life by, something you want others to live their life by. What in the world would you put on this billboard that you would want thousands and thousands of people to see?
To be honest with you, I would love to see one thing on that billboard, and it should say, kindness is 24/7.
That's a good one. We need a whole lot more of that in the world.
Kindness 24/7. And that's what I tell actually my residents, my fellows, the guys, kindness is not just a here and there. You have to be actively thinking, how can I be kind? Kindness is not just, oh, I feel good today. No, no. You have to force ourselves to be kind all the time. We need that now in the world. We need more kindness, more compassion. Kindness in action, not just in words.
Yeah, well, Tarif, that's why I wanted to get you on. Appreciate you taking the time out to join us over these two episodes and share these 12 skills for a better life. I hope that our listeners have learned something about how to do this, and at least one, two, maybe all dozen of these things people have taken to heart and decide that they want to investigate further, get more information, begin to master these 12 things. I don't know if you can ever master them, can you, Tarif?
No, it's actually, we have to keep working.
Yeah, and we'll have all of Tarif's information and any other resources he shares with us in our show notes. So please be sure to check those out. And for everyone who's taken the time to listen to these episodes, I really hope you enjoyed this. And I want to thank you again for tuning into another episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee.
Thank you so much. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, presented by TIPQC. TIPQC is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health. Do you have ideas for a future guest or topic, or even have a question you would like answered on upcoming episodes? Visit www.tipqc.org, that's TIPQC.org, and click on podcast to submit suggestions and questions to our podcast team. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to know when new episodes are available, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube to stay in the loop with our active projects and other relevant news relating to perinatal health in Tennessee.